This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivisodhi. It's our Doctor in the House series. It's a Friday. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in the studio with me. How are you today, George?
I'm feeling a bit hazy.
Really? Still?
Yes. You just need to look out the window.
I know. We had this discussion just last Friday, nothing, it doesn't seem...
It seems a bit worse, really.
Yeah, it does, actually. But
anyway. Never mind. Hopefully it won't dampen our spirit when we have special guests in the studio.
Absolutely. So today we're discussing Alzheimer's because it's World Alzheimer's Day tomorrow, the 21st of September. And September is usually dedicated for it's World Alzheimer's Month. So we're going to be discussing that today, but with a different angle. We usually talk about symptoms and all of that. But today we're going to be talking about caregiving. I think it is absolutely crucial. A lot of us struggling with either a loved one, with this issue. And I don't think Malaysia is quite ready when it comes to support for people with dementia.
Yeah, Mira, you know, I need to pay particular attention because I have two phobias in life.
Which is?
One is to lose my hair, the other one is to lose my mind.
Really? But you're living to 225.
That's right. So sure, that will happen.
It's going to happen.
So I have to listen very carefully.
Very carefully. So in the studio with us is Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin, consultant geriatrician. Welcome to the show, Dr. Tan. It's been ages since we had you on.
Oh, yeah, I know. I missed you.
I know. We did too. Was the last time when we spoke about our Prime Minister after GE14?
I think I've been there since. But the Prime Minister one was particularly fun. Yeah,
it was. Yeah. The super gene that possibly has. Yes.
Yeah, we want a bit of that.
Yes,
we all do.
Totally. We want, but don't know whether we have. So Dr. Tan is in the studio to help us understand community-based caregiving for Alzheimer's. And also in the studio with us is Noor Wahida Hussein. She's better known as Wahida. She's a care professional at a private home-based care. So we want to find out a little bit more about what home-based care really is. When I look around and people come and ask me for help and support, I have to say I'm lost. I don't quite know where to send people for support. A lot of Malaysians think that we can manage this on our own at home with domestic helpers. But it is very clear the needs of a person with dementia is very different from just looking after an elderly person. So welcome to the show, all of you. Let's talk about community and home-based caregiving. Dr. Tan, I mean, who do you see and how, when people come to you, and I'm sure you see lots of people being diagnosed with dementia.
Yes.
Where are people going at the moment?
It depends because quite a lot of our patients with dementia are never diagnosed. Uh-huh. So because they don't particularly have any serious behavioural issues, the family, because of filial piety, just gradually take over the function, and then they seem to be managing okay with looking after them. So that's a vast majority. Mm-hmm. The ones that we see are the ones whom the family actually struggle because of behavioural issues. Issues perhaps, or because there's a lack of available caregivers, and then that's when they actually present to medical services. So the awareness that actually memory loss is not part of old age is still not there. Mm-hmm. So we're not really seeing that many people being diagnosed early and being able to plan their care for them, etc.
So that's challenge number one, not being diagnosed appropriately.
Yeah. Can you elaborate a little bit about what you mean by behavior issues that needed medical attention?
Well, I think the ones that we all know best about is you know, the grandpa who goes out, strips naked and walks around in the streets, or people walking around, getting lost. You know, in the last few months, we've had incidences of old men getting into the car and getting lost on the highway and then being found hundreds of miles away when they run out of petrol. Those are the things that we know best. Mm-hmm. But we've also got family members who can be very violent, both physically and verbally. And those family members find them particularly difficult to manage because you can't retain any caregivers in that kind of circumstances because caregivers actually at the moment can pick and choose where they want to work. Mm-hmm. And so they wouldn't want to work where it's particularly challenging. And a lot of times they are kept at home and we have had family members lock the doors. Some of them even put them in cages. Some of them are restrained. But they feel they have no choice. You know, they are really pushed out of options. But even if they put them in a care facility, they're often restrained as well because the caregivers don't really have the means of actually dealing with these supposed behavioural issues.
Mira, I'm particularly interested in initially when you started the programme saying that a lot of us employ home help, like maid and then
domestic help
and then things that we can get by. And then Moiping highlighted that most of these individuals or family conditions are not diagnosed at all. I mean, I'm just trying to find out how safe is this because domestic helpers are not really trained to help with, individuals or elderly relatives. And do you see situations where families think they can cope but, however, ended up having problems with their loved ones?
There seems to be syndicates now, sort of, where people recognise certain domestic helpers who are actually particularly skilled in looking after older people. Because the domestic helpers actually choose what they want to do. They wouldn't actually declare they want to care for an older person unless they particularly have prior experience or particular interest in it. Most of them will want to look after children or just do housework. So we generally do see better and better caregivers when it comes to domestic helpers who actually, because they chose to do it.
More specialised.
Yes. But there are ones who were tricked by the agency or they didn't know what they were letting themselves in for. And a lot of times when you have these difficult older people or older people with a lot of care needs, then the work is overwhelming. And so family members do tell us that their maids run away. And then every time they get a new one, they'll run away again because work is just too much.
So
the family members still end up having to bear the brunt of the care.
You know, Wahida, you've set up a private home-based care, sort of an organisation. What does that mean? Does that mean you make house visits? How do you actually... what actually goes on there?
Actually, we make a house visit. So through these organisations, so we have an application, actually.
It's an app.
It's got an app, you know, that the caregivers and the care pro, we call ourselves a care pro. And then the care recipient is the patients. And then through that, from the apps, we can communicate what's the condition of the care recipients. So, we get a first initial assessment also from there. We have a summary of the care recipients, I mean the patients. So what we need to be aware of, the patient's condition in details.
What sort of details do you need if somebody wants to sign up to your service?
So they kind of usually there's a first initial assessment will be done by one particular special nurses that will go to the houses for the caregivers and will do an assessment.
Such as, you know, you look at their abilities to...
Abilities to move, you know, about the movement. Is it a bedridden, totally bedridden? Is it like the mobility need to be use a wheelchair or need to be totally dependent or maybe partially dependent? That kind of thing. So
and
we are
you,
aware.
Are you looking only at dementia patients?
Most of our patients is dementia patients. But we have also like care recipients that we call as seniors. We call as seniors. Mostly is all of our care recipient is 60 years age above. So that particular of age.
So after the initial assessment, does that mean that you everything else, all the other support is then just done via the app? Or do you still make home visits?
Yes, we make a home visit, not just from the apps. So like we are care pro, we will apply from the care from the assessment that did by the nurse, the first initial nurses. Then we as a care pro, the care pros will choose the care that is suitable for us according to the time, the flexible time for us to go there. So we choose that kind of care and then go to their home visits. Maybe from the caregivers, they'll request it for about 2-3 hours. It depends from them.
I see. So you sort of support and relieve the caregiver in the house. Do you think it's much of a success? I know you've only been 2 months old, but what have your observations been dealing with caregivers? Who are you dealing with? Are you dealing with family members? Are you dealing with domestic helpers?
So we're dealing with the family members, usually with the family members. So it would be nice if they work together with us You know, what I mean is like the certain communication that we need to communicate with them, that certain things that we need their help also to involve, like a kind of bedridden patients. We care pros, just one care pros go for the visit. We just need them at least to work together with us mm-hmm. for their care of their family members. So from there, because of our knowledge and skill, we can share sometimes. So mm-hmm. we can advise also what is the proper care to they need to know about their family.
Yeah, I mean, Wahida, their parents. I mean, we worked together before in the hospital. Your profession is a nurse. Presumably, majority of the care pros are nurses.
Yes.
And then, let me get this straight. Mm-hmm. Essentially, mm-hmm. the app is a introductory model so that the communication between the care pro and the family is established. Yeah. And after that, the family will purchase or will employ certain level of needs.
Yes.
And then you empower the family so that they can take over the roles more professionally.
No. Usually, we are the one who will continuously doing the care.
Yeah. But what my concern mm-hmm. is that majority of these elderly gentlemen or ladies mm-hmm. will require round-the-clock treatments and care. But what you're providing is just about, 3 to 4 hours of your choice. And how is that possible?
So, that kind of thing. Okay. Usually, we will discuss with the family about member about that. So, they will choose the time that they are not available to care for their family members.
So it's not a whole... you're not providing care for long periods of time. It's just in the interim and how to support
like a respite.
Yes.
I think that's a big misconception in society that older people need to be watched 24/7. Uh-huh. Just because they're old doesn't mean they need to be supervised.
But what if they have something like Alzheimer's, Dr. Tan?
They don't... Alzheimer's, if they're mobile and they're a danger to themselves, yes, they need supervision. But as I mentioned, those are only a minority. Uh-huh. Older people are actually adults. Mm-hmm. And most of them are able to be safe without actually having constant supervision. So there are different levels of care. And the problem is that we're oversubscribing to care at the moment. Uh-huh. So we're actually imposing on children to do a lot of things that the older people can still do. So we're hoping that services like Home Age mm-hmm. will actually allow people to see that what you need to do is to enable and continue to enhance the person's ability to self-care mm-hmm. and to provide care minimally, as little as possible. I know that's so against our filial piety culture, but that is actually the future.
So I know. If there are two bad words in your vocabulary, it's filial piety.
I know, right?
Dr. Tan, I know. We've heard it a million times. You have big problems with it.
So I was hoping this will be empowerment in a sense that, Mm-hmm.
I think because we got a few patients that we're doing a physio also, that we're doing a rehab. They kind of thing, they need a long hours. Like maybe the whole day. The whole day, like a bedridden patient need an NG tube feeding, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we'll come back and find out more about it. I want to know the needs of an Alzheimer's patient. Mm-hmm. What are the needs? Because I've been told that looking after a patient with Alzheimer's is very different from looking after just a person who's aging.
Yes, it is true.
Who's aging quite normally.
Yes.
So what are some of those needs? And, do Alzheimer's patient need specially skilled people to look after them? That's coming up next. If you have a question on home-based care or community-based care, give us a call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's our Health and Living segment, our Doctor in the House series, Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in the studio with me, which means it's a Friday. We'll be done after this, George. It's the weekend after this.
Huh?
I know. And we're discussing Alzheimer's today because it's World Alzheimer's Day tomorrow, the 21st of September. It's World Alzheimer's Month, the whole month of September. So we've just about made it in time to have this discussion. Mm-hmm. Of course, when we talk about things like this, no brainer. We always have consultant geriatrician Professor Dr. Tan Maupin in the studio with us. And also joining us today is Noor Wahida Hussain. She's a care professional at a private home-based care facility. We're discussing community versus home-based caregiving. So far we know that Wahida's sort of outfit called Homage is provide sort of support to caregivers in the house for a couple of hours. Of course, George and I jumping here that, no care needs to be like the whole day or probably even more. Dr. Tan coming in violently to say, no. People need to learn to look after themselves as well. But let's talk about Alzheimer's patients. They're different. Are their needs different? And if they are, what is it, Dr. Tan?
I think the main issue at the moment is if someone, that's why nobody goes to see the doctor. And a lot of our dementia patients, our Alzheimer's patients, actually go and see us without telling their family members. Because the minute people are aware of the label of dementia, they get treated differently.
Right. Oh.
So we actually have dementia patients who are still at work. They're definitely still driving around. Mm-hmm. But because of the patient-doctor confidentiality, we don't tell people. And mm-hmm. it works very well. But the minute the children find out, they take over. Yeah. So actually, the skills lost in dementia are very variable with each individual.
Mm-hmm.
And skills such as driving, cooking, finance management, running a country, those are actually lost at a relatively late stage because those are learned behaviour that you learned in your youth. Things that are lost quite early is what I had for breakfast. Yeah,
short term.
Yeah, short term. You know, have I taken my medication? Have I added salt to this plate of food?
Yeah.
Those kind of things that
who am I married to?
That one is unfortunately lost probably at the very latest stage. Yeah. So I don't know whether it's fortunate or unfortunate. Yeah. Maybe if the marriage was very recent, then they might remember.
Oh, yeah,
might not remember it.
Oh, tough luck. Okay.
So at different stages then, you need different sort of care and support. I mean, isn't there a danger in not telling family members that a patient actually has early stages of dementia or Alzheimer's?
It's patient confidentiality. Mm. So it's a patient assist. It's actually the doctor's has to make that ethical decision whether the patient poses a danger to themselves and also to the community. But so if they are still able to function well at work and they're not a danger on the road, then there's no reason for the doctor to put a stop to it. Mm. But if we sense that it could be a danger, then we would actually advise the patient to talk to their children. And if there is still resistance, then we do have to intervene and sometimes actually get hold of their loved ones.
Do you counsel families on whether or not they need support, whether it's home-based or, you know, to send them off to a home?
Oh, that's very, very difficult. And at the moment, there's no way I have that expertise all the time to actually do a detailed enough assessment to make that kind of decision, to help the patient make that kind of decision. So we actually need to work closer with our home care providers such as HomeAge to actually help them see what they need. Because I can't go to someone's house to see what it's like, how the home situation is like and whether they can or cannot manage. Mm-hmm. So we usually ask them, you know, who's doing the cooking, who's doing the cleaning, and we can do basic assessments whether the other person can go to the toilet themselves, dress themselves. But we are not the ones there to see exactly what happened.
So do you request for Wahida's assistance whenever you see fit to do so?
At the moment, no. We hope we can, because hopefully with the new initiative in public-private partnership, then we can do better. Because we've actually visited this on several occasions for the past 5 or 6 years, because we all know that the government healthcare system is on its knees. It is buckling under the weight of the care needs of the aging population today. So there's no way that the government can shoulder the cost of care that is currently being required. Mm-hmm. But we are wasting a lot of resources because there's no communication between the public sector and the private healthcare providers. We always cite personal data protection, in that we can't share information. So we actually need some sort of policy, some sort of guidance to actually allow us to, and also some sort of agreements that will actually allow us to work closer with the private sector to provide seamless care, kind of transitions out in and out of hospital, provide hospital avoidance schemes. So, you know, if we find that this person's got a cold and therefore can't walk very well, instead of coming to hospital to catch a hospital-acquired infection, we can just say, oh, why don't you call HomeAge? And then we can actually see them in clinic. HomeAge can bring them to the clinic, or we can even work closely with a private sector GP who can then communicate with us their decisions, and we can say, oh, that's fine, or no, actually, maybe I should see this person. You know, at some point when there's enough of us, we may even be able to go out to the older person's houses to see them.
Do we know enough of what's needed in terms of care for people with dementia or Alzheimer's?
We will never know enough. But I think we do know that a lot of older people with undiagnosed dementia function very well in their home environment because it's a learned behaviour. So we try as much as possible to preserve the function, to keep them in that environment. So by moving them out of the environment, they deteriorate very quickly because they have a lack of ability to learn new skills. So if you move them from their own home to a care home, then suddenly they have no ability to learn where the toilet is, or they don't know where the kitchen is. So they could become very agitated, but they will also be de-skilled very fast because they can't learn new skills.
And also, Mira,
makes a whole lot of sense.
Absolutely. And then many individuals, elderly individuals, don't want to be institutionalized, right?
No.
I mean, because their home environment is their environment that they're familiar with, and that's why I think in home age kind of like a facilities will work perfectly well. It's a win-win situation. Well, Hida, when I heard the word apps, I was excited because I felt that in this modern day of technology, there's many things that can actually help us to care for our elderly patients more, or elderly individual, not necessarily patients, you know, with more up-to-date technology. I have seen programs that they're talking about smart city where, you know, the parameters such as heart rate and everything is recorded as soon as there's problems. Then is it, how much of new technology are you incorporating into this app in order to help for you to manage your patients?
Okay. Actually, this one, this app, I think it is very good. Because it's like not just after we do that, all the assessment is very detailed to us, like a care pro. After we choose that care, so let's see, so that we choose us. Okay, you are chosen for this care.
Okay.
So we can see the visit summary that previous care pro have taken care of the patient. So we know what is happening daily.
So it's a portal for communication at the moment.
Yes. So, and the family also can communicate together.
I see.
And then the homish also can contact, can all can communicate together that all the visit summary of what's happening to the patients in detail, the blood pressure, if anything's happening, all is in there. Even we can put in a picture of the patient's condition, what we did to the care recipients, what care that we're giving to the care recipient, and how their conditions, and then is this improvement in the physiotherapist, everything's, and then...
I mean, so apart from portal for communication, what do you see potential for this to develop into in the future? Let's say, for example, how do we detect when an individual or patient is in distress, or how do the family members get hold of you whenever there's an emergency? Is that possible now?
I think it's possible because I remember I went to one seminar. Right? Can you talk about this is from Singapore. I went to that seminar. They sharing about their home care.
Oh, Singapore. Maybe we should just go.
I know. But it's interesting. I saw it once, and I think in 2017, doctor.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. From like there's a center that you can apply to the patients to monitor the heart rate, to monitor the blood pressure.
Yeah. I mean, Wahida, I must admit, the program I saw was actually based in a smart city that Singapore designed, so that because they have they are catering for aging population, and that's exactly what they're doing. And I admit it was in Singapore. Has the model home age been used in any other country to see the success of it? No.
Okay. All right. So we have a question here from a listener who said he's listening to the session and wants to know how you and the other carers are selected. How do you select the carers for homage?
Okay. It's actually we send a resume. Then we need to sit for an interview. And then the interview is a very detailed one. So unless we are really capable with knowledge and skills, we will be chosen. If not, they won't choose us. So I think it's quite a great thing because I feel like, wow, this is the first time like I see like a home care professional going to take care of the patient at home being selected like that.
And they're all nurses?
Yes, they're all nurses. with knowledge and skill that is quite good.
I mean, you have 17 years of experience as a nurse, and you specialize as a ICU nurse.
Yes.
Okay. Do you need skills in looking after older patients with dementia and Alzheimer's to actually, is it a different skill or is it something different?
I think, yes, it is. Because through my experience in ICU, even like sometimes, like doctor says, that dementia in Alzheimer's patients is not really properly being diagnosed. So when they come to the hospital, then suddenly the doctors is realizing that this patient is quite different, you know. Then from there, they came from like maybe for cardiology cases. I have that one experience. Then doctor found out I feel like this patient has a dementia or anything. Or we can refer to gerontology for that. So then it's been properly diagnosed and then properly medicated. I think they'll be quite fine, actually. They have a proper medications, everything.
Sure. The other question is, this person says he suspects that his relative has dementia, but not sure what the major signs they should be looking out for. If you can advise Dr. Tan.
I couldn't cover it all, but the classical thing would be forgetfulness, you know, forgetting where they put their car keys, you know, forgetting whether they've eaten.
So I remember when you've mentioned this in the past, I panicked because...
Mira always forget when she puts her car keys.
if this was a normal occurrence, so he knew that Mira always forgot her car keys when she was in her 40s.
Mira, as long as you remember who I am,
it doesn't matter when you're in your 80s, whether you forget your car keys or not. But if they always remembered where they put their car keys. Yeah.
Yes. So that was the magic word. If you consistently forget. The one off is
all right.
I think
we should do the test now. What program did you do yesterday? See, we can test this.
Psychiatry series.
All right. Okay, that's fine.
It's all right. Yes. I remember that.
If you're always absent-minded, then, you know, then we'll have to use other tests. For instance, we actually have to ask the older person whether they've lost skills. So one of the classical things is we ask them whether they're able to clean the house, right? But we all know that all Malaysian men don't clean the house ever. So that it's not a skill that's lost, so we can't use that as a test for dementia.
That has got to be a promo.
Yes.
How can you lose a skill when you never did it in the first place?
Okay, I mean,
that is golden.
It is golden. It is golden. I'm so embarrassed because that probably just highlights.
Because you're just one of them. Yeah, George better learn it now.
Better learn it now. Then that will be.
So
a
when
condition.
You lose that's it, we will know. You're losing it.
I recently watched a movie. You know, Hollywood obviously portray this as very dramatic, and the most recent one I saw was called Still Alice. Yeah. You know, okay. I mean, essentially, what's the actress? I don't know. She was a professor and then suddenly was running, you know, and just forgot where she was and panicked and that sort of thing. How true is this sort of like scenario that somebody suddenly just realized that they're running, you know, go jogging in Bukit Kiara and suddenly realize that they have no idea where they were? And
yes, it suddenly gets disoriented. That's a classical thing. So the first, often, sometimes the first sign, because the children tend to dismiss forgetfulness as normal part of aging. So the first sign they realize something is wrong is mom didn't come home. Then it took a long time for her to come home because why she said, I got out this lift and then I just can't figure out where I am. Yeah.
I was a bit worried earlier on because I forgot the actress. His name is Julianne Moore. So I'm not out there.
I was thinking about that as well. Yeah.
Julianne
but she
Moore.
Was so convincing.
Correct.
Yeah, I watched it on the plane, which I shouldn't have. And I cried and I cried and I cried. And I remember getting to, I was going to Dublin. And I was so upset at that point. I sent a message to my friend who manages the dementia, the memory clinic. And I said, our service is rubbish. He obviously didn't take that very well. Because I just felt that we weren't doing enough for these people.
Because, you know, she portrayed that so well. You know, very successful woman, suddenly hit that by this. And the frustration she demonstrated.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit about, I mean, you said many individuals come to you without their family knowledge. And then they begin to realise that they're a bit forgetful. What sort of frustrations and what sort of emotional journey do they go through?
There's a lot of denial. It's a little bit different with Malaysia because it's very, very diverse. But what we tend to struggle with is the denial part because of the stigma, the negative stigma. So a lot of them refuse to accept. They said they're just old, and we get angry. They get angry with us. You know, how can you say they got dementia? They can remember things from a very long time ago. Their memory is excellent. They will just say they're just old. That's why they're not doing this. So because being labelled with dementia has such a negative connotation, that a lot of them prefer not to have the label. So that's really, really tough.
But you did say that it's a spectrum. People will progress into different phases, and then the needs will change as well, isn't it? The caregiving needs. Yes. How do you cope with that, Waida? And can you explain to us maybe some of the needs in different phases?
Can you elaborate further?
Over a period of time, obviously the need change as the disease progress. Mm-hmm. And how do you evolve and then also adapt?
So Waida comes from the more the providing for their needs. It doesn't really matter how severe their memory is. Yes. You're looking at their function, isn't it? What they can do for themselves, isn't that right? Yeah. And how does that deteriorate over time?
I think there's one case that it's quite fast, you know, it's deteriorating. Mm-hmm. There's one time I went to see these care recipients. He still can properly walk, and then he can still feed by himself. Mm-hmm. Then by another week, he don't even remember that he already passed motion, passed urine everywhere. He don't even remember that. Until that part, he don't even remember that where he is, even that is in his own room.
Yeah, sometimes it can fluctuate. Yeah. So people with a particular type of dementia, Lewy body dementia, they can be very, very lucid one week. Uh-huh. Then the next week, they're totally different. Uh-huh. And then they come back again and they're okay again.
Yes.
So they have to adapt to their varying needs as well.
Yeah. And then he become agitated. He don't even recognize us. Mm. So shouting like, who are you? Why you coming here? So got to explain to them, got to let them calm down in the first place.
At what stage would you alert the medical profession when you feel that the patient's life or the family might be in danger or might have concerns? At what stage do you do that?
So I'm just going to interrupt here and say in the app, you have the care recipient, the caregiver, you have the care professional like you, but is the doctor part of this app and this conversation?
No, we don't have a doctor. We have a nurses. We have a nurses. Yeah.
Dr. Tan, should the doctor be a part of that process?
I wish everything could have a geriatrician running it, but that will make it, first of all, it's not feasible because there's not enough geriatricians. Mm. But we also need to be mindful of the cost of care, because if you have to cost in the cost of medical care, that actually increases it a lot. Mm. So, but what we really need is, like you said, better communication so that there is a way of them tapping into care when they need it.
We can't demand too much from Dr. Mopping because she's supposed to look after us well, remember?
When you are 225 years old.
That's right.
You are going to live long, Dr.
Yes, I know. I'm going to terrorise this earth for a lot longer.
Yes, and we'll need your help, so you better be around. I was reading an article about a doctor who wrote an article about how he cared for his own wife. Mm. And he said in the profession itself needs to recognize care and what it really means. Doctors need to understand what care really means. Mm. They don't teach you that in medical school. So then it just becomes very clinical, and you're unable to advise family or even the patient when it comes to the aspect of care. What are your thoughts on that, Dr. Tan?
Are you sure you want to get me started?
Yes.
Okay. So
that's why I brought it up. You'd be the perfect person.
So we have doctors who say to the family caregivers that you only have one mum. So it's your job to look after her.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. It doesn't help in any way. Yeah, as if they don't know that. You know, they can count to one.
And that's not helpful.
I know, right? Oh, never take your eyes off her. Oh, like real. You look, close your eyes, go to sleep. You can't go to the toilet. You can't eat. And who's going to earn the money then? So common sense like that sometimes defies the medical profession.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we are actually trying to incorporate this in the undergraduate curriculum, and we are actually threatening the doctors. In future, if you don't know how to actually, we call it dispose of a patient, as in getting them out of hospital, then you can't operate because they'll block off all your beds.
Uh-huh.
So you actually need to educate yourself about available care services so that you can actually facilitate a safe discharge. Because it'll be a matter of time before family members sue us for unsafe discharges. I'm sure George has already had a bit of experience. Yeah.
Didn't know that. Yeah. Yeah. I'm taking notes. Unsafe discharges.
Paradoxically, in private hospital, many people are kept in the hospital for different reasons.
Are you sure you want to say that? Are you still? Do you still want friends in your workplace?
He's done it already.
Okay.
But you know, realistically, we know that these people need long-term care, and something needs to be done from the doctor's side of things. Mm-hmm. And this very doctor also said, and this is really thinking out of the box, when he said that he feels that care should be a not-for-profit thing. What do you think?
It's nonsense. Everyone
needs care. We will need it at some point.
Yeah, and it's really difficult because they all want it for free. They want everything for free. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, but who's going to become a doctor if they're going to work for free and not look after, don't have any money to actually, you know, pay the bills? Yeah, so it's really tough.
You know, conveniently, while you mentioned that, we would like to ask, you know, Wahida, you know, the day will come when I need your help, Wahida, right? Okay. So what sort of like cost am I looking at and who's funding it?
Oh, this one, I think, because I'm not sure about that.
You're not sure about the cost basis.
But
essentially, this is presumably funded by the family in order to get your expertise.
They pay for the service.
Yes,
that's right.
They pay for the service.
What sort of ballpark figure will you look at on average? What sort of like a resource would family need to put aside in order to get your expertise?
What do you mean? Okay?
How much will it cost?
Escape Pro?
That's right.
So Escape Pro... actually, this is quite difficult for me to discuss about the
what? Any ballpark figure. You can say it ranges between 200 to 500 ringgit.
It's maybe like 1 hour for our service. Like just a normal ADL is, I think, RM20 per hour.
So we're not talking about colossal amount of money. Yes. So it's 20 ringgit per hour.
Yeah, it is quite economical. Because you're not using highly trained nurses to provide ADLs. Huh? Yeah, so you actually... but you're using nurses to provide care and nursing care.
What is ADL?
Yeah.
Activity daily living.
Okay.
Activity daily living.
Such as like bathing the patient.
Yes, bathing.
But later on in the stages of the disease, you probably will need that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We probably need that. Even like a bedridden patient is different. Like a full taking care of bedridden patients, it'd be like 25
per hour. Now I see how difficult it is for you to answer the question, because individual patients will need a bespoke treatment, and then therefore it's impossible to kind of like generalize the reimbursement scheme.
Yes.
Okay.
It depends on the condition and the needs that needs in future.
Okay. All right. We're going to go for a quick break and come back right after this. We'll conclude this discussion. Once again, if you have a question, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. If you have a question on community-based caregiving for Alzheimer's patients, coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. It's our Doctor in the House series, Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, with me on the Health and Living segment. And we're discussing Alzheimer's because it's World Alzheimer's Day tomorrow. That's 21st of September. Joining us also, Professor Dr. Tan Maupin, a consultant geriatrician, and Noor Wahida Hussain, a care professional at a private home-based care facility. Now, we know that HomeEdge is actually an app, and then that helps you as well in terms of giving care. Or it's a respite, as you said, Dr. Tan, at the moment for people who need caregiving, maybe intermittently or, you know, whenever you actually need it.
Yes.
It's good to know. So cost has been a huge question that comes to mind. And Dr. Intan Sabrina, she's, I know, from the Churras Rehab Center. She sent in some rates. If you need a gauge, this is not the absolute rate, but it's just
some ballpark figures.
Mm-hmm. She says it's about 5,000 ringgit a month for a nursing home, 200 ringgit a day for a day nurse, about 60 to 80 ringgit an hour for a physio visit, and 100 to 200 ringgit an hour for either speech therapy or for a rehab physician to come and do a home visit. So that's roughly what you're looking at if you want to plan for your old age. probably, don't forget inflation.
And actually, this is extremely cost economical. So that's why we've actually become a retirement capital of the world, because we're actually the best place to retire in the whole world because care is affordable.
I like the way you call us cheap by calling us cost economical. What you say is that Malaysia is cheap, come over.
Yeah, but the question is, we're both going to become an aging society before we even know it. Can we afford it?
That's the thing, because our average wage is so little. £5,000, £5,000 a month is not affordable.
Absolutely.
And so you can get cheaper homes, but then we have a lot of outcry.
So what you're saying is that since we're cost economical, cheap, and then we get all the foreigners to come use our system and spoil the market, and then we can't afford it ourselves. What's going on here?
Because people don't understand that cost of social care should be factored into healthcare costs.
Yes.
So people like George, before he does an operation, needs to actually consider factoring the cost of the care after the operation.
Right.
Yeah, I think you. I'm sure you do that.
Well, the thing
you're
is,
very well trained.
You know, I suggest you not say anything before you open up the floodgates for Dr. Tan to really shoot you down. Almost there.
Right. Okay. Almost there. Mira, the thing is, Mira highlighted in the very beginning that in the vast majority of Malaysians would imagine that the simple fact of hiring a domestic helper somehow substitute for all these care. Incredibly unfair for the domestic helper and sometimes unsafe. How do we move forward with that sort of mentality? Because clearly, like you say, social care is costly and needs to be factored into your earnings and in order to fund that future.
Yes. There are a lot of countries in the world who rely on migrant workers to actually provide care. We're not the only one. Mm-hmm. And what we really need to do is look at and to ensure these migrant workers have adequate training, they have adequate rest and their human rights. So at the moment, all those is not being respected in our country, it's sad to say. So I think we will continue using migrant workers for a while. But we just need to make sure they've got enough rights and they've got enough training. So assessments need to be in place. So sometimes we need to decide whether one person who is untrained is capable of looking after this older person or whether we need a second person. You know, sometimes they're made to lift older people that are twice their weight. It's ridiculous. Sometimes the older person just needs company. So, someone to play chess with, someone to play drafts with. You don't need much training to do that, hopefully. So it all varies.
Speaking of someone to talk to, I'm just not talking about the elderly, but I just had a meeting with our Multimedia Commission this morning and they were saying that they have a problem with the line 999. They get 1 million calls a month, of which only 4% have some sort of
emergency.
Absolutely. It's not even an emergency. So the 96% are absolutely nothing. The 4% may not even be an emergency. It could be, I don't know what to do because I've dropped my keys in the drain. Or, I don't know what to do because someone's double parked behind me. Now, in their minds, it's an emergency, but that's not the emergency 999 is for. And of the 96%, a ton of which are people who are lonely calling that number just to talk to somebody.
Funny enough, I've never dialed 999.
No, Dr. Tan.
Don't do that. Don't do that today.
You create your own line for the lonely people.
I know, right? But obviously, a lot of education needs to be done because a lot of us don't actually believe 999 works anymore. I have an ambulance number and call the ambulance directly through that number. And that's what I do with all my relatives. No, anybody's allowed that number. We hold it in the University of Malaya. You ring the wards, they all have numbers. So we have no choice.
Yeah, I think my point was loneliness is going to be a huge issue among the elderly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dementia, Alzheimer's just being one
Not
aspect.
Not just amongst the elderly, it's amongst all of even us.
I'll be your friend, George.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Will you be my friend too?
Oh, I'll be your friend for life, George. But it is a a big problem, and that's one of the things that we're trying to do, and hopefully HomeAge can work with us in not just ensuring they have physical care, but to ensure that we re-enable them and we bring them back out into the community. So re-enablement, but also the best prevention, the best treatment is prevention. So we are hoping that our older people will actually continue to actually participate in society. So we're coming up with schemes that will actually encourage older people to develop their own social networks within their communities to help each other, you know, to provide kind of lots of we call it lifelong learning, physical education, health education, to actually ensure that they all become like our prime minister.
It's got a super gene. We know that. You know, speaking of which, you've come out with a book just for that.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So
it's not been launched, so we're going to get the sneak peek from you.
Okay. Teaser.
Yes. So the main author is actually Dr. Teo Gekin. She's now a lecturer. She's got psychology background. She's a counsellor. And she's got a PhD in marital relationships in older people. So we've worked together with Kin, as well as Dr. Chong, who's actually a lecturer in our nursing department, to actually develop these programs that is funded by a grant called Promoting Independence in Our Seniors, to get them to actually tell us what they want, what the issues are. And then we were so, so overwhelmed by the talent and the enthusiasm. And just so the main issues they had was learning how to get along, because, you know, we have such a diverse community. So we actually had these courses called empathic listening for them, etc. And then they took it from there. You know, we had we now have communities who develop multiple activities for each other, mutually supportive when they're ill. That's the book is actually describing the whole journey of how we actually came up with it's not quite a magic formula, but it's supposed to be more of a manual, an instruction manual. So it's called Practical Guide to Promoting Independent Social Participation in Seniors.
It's
community care at the end of the day, isn't it? Community-based care.
Yes, and it's free. So that's the free care that you can get.
So you said nothing is free. That's free.
I mean, Dr. Tan has always spoken about this, that the community needs to play a larger role. I mean, the government can't sustain, neither can we all afford. Yes. But if we build this community to care, then going back to basics, this is what we did back
like
in the day.
And people like don't have to worry about going out of business, because they always have, you know, an increasing number of clients. Mm-hmm. So they will never meet the needs otherwise. So we need to actually make this a seamless process where people can flip from one service to another.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, I was terribly concerned right from the beginning of the show when you said many people are not diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's. What are we going to do about that? What is your message in terms of awareness? We all know, but you said there's stigma, there's denial. So what do we do? What will you say to everyone? Listen, that this is the way forward. Come and get diagnosed.
Yes, come and get diagnosed, but we need places for them to get diagnosed. Yeah. So we need to train a lot more people to be able to actually do memory tests and to be able to actually treat individuals with dementia. So the government does have to come in here.
Can we not just have a website where we can all go in and do a memory test and get our results?
We're trying to. And that's something we're hoping to develop.
You've just given her another project to do. She's just finished a book.
But that is a no-brainer.
We're actually at a very, very advanced stages of potentially being able to do that. But
see, she's already thought about it.
Yes. But what we do, which is happening in Atria, next weekend in Atria Damansara, the Alzheimer's Disease Foundation is actually doing Alzheimer's Awareness Weekend, and there's a memory walk on the Sunday. But both Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 7, our medical students as well as staff from the Alzheimer's Disease Foundation are actually offering free memory tests. They're simple screening tests, but that's a starting point.
You know, my vague memory brings back last year's show. It was the same place, isn't it?
Yes, that's
oh,
right.
Oh my goodness, there is
hope.
You
haven't lost your mind.
No, I haven't. I haven't. Oh, but that's long-term memory.
I know.
What did I do yesterday? Okay, all right. Your message, Wahida, on, you know, home-based or support that HomeAge gives to patients who are growing older, what would you like to leave us with?
I think we even can provide, like Dr. Tan said just now, even like just a company for them, just a company for them. And then like the family, like Dr. Tan also saying, like need to earn the money. Who's going to earn the money if nobody going to, if they need to take care of the care recipients? So we can be that person that can do that part for the family. So we can be part of help. So I think it is good.
Well said.
Yeah. Dr. Tan?
Yeah. Well, I basically don't feel afraid of asking for help. There's help out there. It's not, you don't have to go it alone. Yeah, we know you still love your mom or dad, but you need to ask for help.
Yes,
George.
I'm just glad both of you agreed to be my friends forever.
Oh, that was easy, George.
That was easy.
Thank you all very much for joining me today. This World Alzheimer's Day, which is tomorrow, the 21st of September, Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, Dr. Tan Mo Pin, consultant geriatrician, and Noor Wahida Hussain, a care professional on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.